Coming up on Tapestry, we're headed to Allegheny County, to the charming town of Angelica, New York, and the countryside that surrounds it. First, we'll dig into the world of regenerative farming with Jesse and Zach Badgley.
One day, I think I came home from work and she said, well, what if we moved home and started a sheep farm?
The way that they work as a system is really impressive.
Next, we follow the unmistakable scent of salt-rising bread wafting from the ovens of the Angelica Bakery.
When I was a little kid, I had to walk past Main Street every day to go home, and it smelled like somebody was hanging dirty socks. You couldn't escape it.
And when we found out Angelica is the home of a volunteer-run community radio station, we couldn't resist paying a visit.
Good evening and welcome to the Hip Crips Music Emporium on 92.7 FM. WRAQ LP Angelica, the sound of our town.
That's all coming up on Tapestry right after this.
Compact Science is your gateway to the science of everything in our region. Join host Sarah Jane Gomlick-Green and investigate the geology of Niagara Falls, discover the chemistry in sponge candy, and learn how density affects lake effect snow. Watch Compact Science on the Buffalo Toronto Public Media YouTube channel.
From in-depth reporting to musical masterpieces, dramas, and mysteries to local bands, Buffalo Toronto Public Media delivers it all. Stay informed, be inspired, and join us. This is Public Media.
Welcome to Tapestry. I'm your host, Lynn Bader. Each week, Tapestry celebrates the rich history, vibrant culture, and unique people that shape our region and define community. Today, we're off to Angelica, New York in Allegheny County, full of rolling hills, open fields, and lots of farmland. But here's a fun fact. 96% of those farms are family-owned. One of them is Firefly Farm in Allen, just outside Angelica, where Zach and Jesse Badgley recently kicked off their farming adventure on 83 acres and chasing a dream that starts with sheep. Thank you so much for letting us come hang out with you a little bit today.
Absolutely. It was kind of a shock to me. I'm like, it's kind of a small farm. I don't know what you guys expect, but...
Well, it may be a small farm, but I think the story of how this farm came to be is really interesting. How did you come to pick this spot, and what was the decision around becoming farmers?
I would say first and foremost, COVID. We were living in Salt Lake City, Utah, and I had a really strong desire to come back home. I'm from the country, so a city like that to me was, after 3 or 4 years, however long it was, it started to become too overwhelming for me, and I wanted to come back home.
How about you, Jesse?
I think for the longest time, I never really thought I would come home.
Where are you both from originally?
All right, I'm from Rochester, and he's from like the Fredonia area.
I was born in Chautauqua County and lived most of my life in Cattaraugus County.
Was farming something you knew a lot about?
No, we knew nothing at all.
Now that's an adventure. Jesse had been obsessed with sheep since she was a kid. And when the dream got serious, so did the research. They say you can learn just about anything on YouTube. But sheep herding? That's next level commitment.
One day, I think I came home from work and she said, well, what if we moved home and started a sheep farm? It was funny at the time, but after however long COVID was, and I mean, almost an unhealthy amount of YouTube watching every single day, every minute of every day for a couple years straight made us feel confident that we could do it.
We actually moved our plans to get married forward. We rented a cabin in the mountains of Utah. We eloped with our parents tuning in over Zoom, which is wild. It was yesterday was our anniversary, yep. Our fourth anniversary.
Oh, happy anniversary.
Thank you. And then actually today was when we put an offer in on the house 4 years ago. My parents came to see it on our behalf because we were still out in Utah. And then I came out the first day that they lifted the quarantine. I flew out to come see it. It's kind of exactly what we were looking for.
This happened to be an hour and a half from my parents, an hour and a half from her parents.
It'll need some help and a lot of, you know, elbow grease over the years. But
it's been a lot of elbow grease just in the first few years.
Within like the first month of moving here, we had sheep before we had internet. We had 6 sheep, 13 chickens. And then our first year, for some odd reason, we decided we were going to do 100 meat chickens, just go big in that one category.
So, wow.
And now we're up to a little over 50 sheep at the moment. There's 100 egg layer chickens, and then we're still doing about 75 to 100 meat chickens every season.
I'm pretty sure there's more than 100 egg layers out there. It seems like it anyway. You get a half a bucket of eggs every day. It's a half a 5-gallon bucket. So.
And then there's the 10 quail.
As the farm grew from a handful of sheep to dozens, Jesse and Zach reached out to friends, family, and other farmers to guide their journey.
We just happened to find somebody within like an hour radius, and she has been our mentor since we've started. So we've continued to get sheep from her. She talked us into getting chickens our first year and just gave us some of that confidence. And she teaches agriculture. She's been so wonderful. You know, we send videos to our mentors and we, you know, check with a couple different people. We, you know, are part of all these like Facebook groups and just like absorbing things and what people recommend over the years until you have an idea of like, okay, well, this is what this is and this is what I need to do.
Zach and Jesse have embraced the goal of becoming regenerative farmers, which includes best practices of moving the animals to different sections of pasture several times a week to ensure that they're living healthy and happy lives.
Everything on the farm should only ever have one bad day in its life, and that's when it goes to get processed. So we want everything as happy as possible, stress-free as possible, and living like a good life.
The meat chickens, you know, we move the meat chickens multiple times a day onto fresh grass, and that's to be, you know, off of their own manure in a really clean environment. But they eat grass, they eat bugs, they love bugs, they chase crickets around. Same thing with our egg layers. You know, the yolks are so much more orange and nutritious because they're eating what they should eat. You know, when you get eggs from the grocery store and it says vegetarian fed, that animal has never been outside. They're supposed to eat bugs, and they eat snakes. They run around, they eat mice, they eat snakes, they eat whatever they can get. They love to forage, and they'll, you know, fight over a worm and chase each other around. If somebody gets a cricket at the party, you know, like it's
trying to let the animals be as close to how they would be in nature as possible. And with farming, you can't always be like that, but grazers like this would naturally move around. They have an instinctual knowledge to move off of what they've already soiled and eaten, and you know, they would move for miles around if you let them. So we just try to mimic that as much as possible, mimicking the way nature does it, because they had it right before we even tried farming. So
like the idea is to like build soil versus to take it away. Like by moving the sheep throughout the field, you're spreading around their manure, and they do a really great job of just fertilizing the land themselves.
All sheep have natural parasites, worms basically, and it starts about 3 days after they're laid. You know, the sheep do their business on the field, and in 3 days, those worms and the larvae are very viable. So you want to move the sheep off of that and give it at least 45 to 60 days rest before that animal's back on there to allow the parasite load to die off.
Really?
I mean, you get the like the jokes that people make. They're like, oh, people are like sheep or whatever. Like, you're just following the leader. But the way that they work as a system is really impressive.
I mean, it's a pretty efficient system if you just trust the sheep. The first couple of years, it was all about like controlling the sheep because I didn't know what I was doing. And now it's just me and the sheep hanging out doing the day-to-day things because I've learned to just trust them. It's a lot of work for me, but she luckily handles all the financials and the charts and those
records.
Kinds of things. Record keeping, yeah. She does
business,
all that for
the
me.
Business part of the business. Yep.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And
I'm
then are you still,
though.
You work remotely? Are you still doing
yeah,
your...
Yeah, I work in tech. I'm like a manager of a team of designers for like an enterprise company. They're, you know, centered in Toronto and everything's online. So we just happen to have great internet. And so it works really well. And they're really flexible. So I can tell them I'm going to need, you know, a flexible couple of weeks because we're going to be lambing, and they're very understanding of just being able to give me that time. And lambing is also an absolute joy. And that's, he's our full-time farmer.
Wait a minute. Okay, Zach. That was quick.
Lambing
for her.
Lambing season for me brings, like, I'm just kind of naturally a worrywart kind of person. So with babies being born and that being our livelihood, it's like a month-long period where I'm just kind of stressed out and ready for it to be over. But as soon as they're on the ground, I love it.
And why do you love it?
Oh, I love the entire thing. It's like a really rewarding thing to be a part of. And most of the time they don't need me, but I do like to be there for the entire, you know, like thing, just to make sure that mom is safe and babies are safe and everybody gets a really great start and that it's not too stressful.
Right now the sheep are in a little bit larger garage than this. But I hear a barn is coming.
We are going to build a 60 by 100 barn, which will be huge, full concrete, and it'll give us the ability to do what we want to do. We're definitely close quartered and just making it work, and you know, and that's been working, you know, great so far, but you have a limit. And so we have our hay in our attached garage and our sheep in our detached garage, and it looks a little wild that the mailman delivering, you know, our stuff, and we feel like imposter farmers a little bit, but you know, just feel like we've been kind of working up to this point. And so it'll be pivotal for us, like mentally, and then it, for what we're able to do.
Right from the beginning, it was like 100% understood that if we're going to do this, we're going for it. So
yeah, absolutely. There was no all hands on deck.
Yep.
And so what does the future of Firefly Farms look like for you?
The next few years is just going to move towards a place where when you drive by, there's no question whatsoever that this is a sheep farm.
You know, as you age, you can't do all of the crazy things that we're doing now. And so I think that'll just be our goal.
Throw a kid into the mix, get a little bit of help, and then also somebody to hand it down to, because the vision we have for this place, it would be a shame to have to hand it down to nobody. So
lots to do.
Yep, there's lots to do. And I think it's important that we keep small farms going in America.
It's amazing when you drive through the back roads of Western New York and you go through these little towns and villages and hamlets, learning about amazing stories like yours, that you're here and you had a dream and you did whatever you needed to do to make that dream come true for you all. I got to ask you this question. 5 years ago, you were sitting in Salt Lake City, right? Hanging out, not dealing with COVID, not dealing with anything. Take a second and think about that life and think about today. Regrets?
I have zero. I'm so much better off in this kind of setting. I'm just a rural kind of guy, so I'm much more at peace, and I love animals. Sometimes I can be not the friendliest of humans, so I always say that I prefer the company animals to people for the most part. So I have zero regrets. I don't know about her, but I'm good to go.
How about you, Jesse?
I mean, there's stress that comes with it for sure, but at the end of the day, this is a much better existence. We wouldn't trade it at all. It was a great adventure living out west. We loved it. You know, our lives looked very different, but I would take this any day. I love animals. I do. And it's very peaceful to take a break from like a stressful work meeting or whatever it might be and be able to just come out here and say hi to a sheep or a chicken or, you know, whatever it might be, or take a walk to the back of the field. This is where I will live any day.
Up next, we're off to the Angelica Bakery right after this snapshot of Angelica history.
In the heart of Angelica's historic district, past the library, quaint shops, and eateries, stands a post office that nearly closed decades ago. Often in many small communities, the post office isn't just for sending mail, it's a gathering place. In an effort to help save it, local artist Pat Cakey designed a special postal cancellation in 1996, an angel symbolizing the town's name. Approved by the U.S. Postal Service, the unique postmark is used during a small window each year when Angelica's post office transforms into Angel Station. Because the stamp is destroyed each season, Pat designed a new folksy angel every year until her passing in 2023. The uptick in mail volume saved Angelica's post office from closure. Now, nearly 30 years later, the first Friday in December has become a beloved tradition. Visitors and collectors from around the world send their holiday cards through Angelica just to receive the Angel Station postmark, sponsored by the Booster Citizens. A little piece of Christmas magic from this small but mighty town.
Nelson Mandela once said, "Let there be work, bread, and salt for all." I'm Lynn Bader, and you're listening to Tapestry. In the Angelica area, all of this holds true. David Drury and Kirk Spangler are carrying on the tradition of Angelica Bakery founders Dottie and Dwayne Graham. I'm getting a little hungry, so let's head over to the bakery and get the scoop. What are your earliest memories of having salt rising bread?
When I was a little kid, you could leave the Angelica Central School, and I had to walk past Main Street every day to go home, and it smelled like somebody was hanging dirty socks everywhere in town. You couldn't escape it.
How did the bread taste? Did you like it?
I love it now. I think it comes with age. I do. No, I did not like it when I was younger. It's an acquired taste, and once you get that taste, it's just like first taste the scotch, once you get used to it, it gets pretty damn good.
People really, really like it, or they're just kind of like, eh.
But even if they don't like it, they associate a fondness and a nostalgia with it.
Oh, sure. Yeah, this area is known for Angelica, Sol Rising Bread, you know, from Olean to Hornell.
So
you know,
Rochester.
Rochester and, you know, south of Rochester, south Buffalo. Of Buffalo. And, you know, we didn't know there was any other Sol Rising Bread growing up. There was only Angelica.
When the two of you got together, how did the idea of taking over a bakery that had closed down, how did that all happen?
I hadn't eaten it in a while, I guess. And I called him up and I said, what's going on with the bakery? Because he's Mr. Angelica, you know? And he's unofficial.
Kurt, Mr. Angelica. Yeah. Yeah. Okay, gotcha. Yeah.
Well, if anyone knows, I asked my wife and I said, you know, I'll call Cork. At that point, I don't exactly know the details, but we kind of joked around about, you know, maybe we should think about buying it, you know, because I didn't know the family. And he, you know, he knows the Grahams. And
well, it was when I went to talk to her, to ask her what would it take. And my drive was, because I knew he would be a good partner, my drive was just to bring it back to Angelica. The original recipe was made here in Belfast from the Jennings family, which Dottie is a part of.
Tell me about Dottie.
She's a sweetheart.
She's just spunky.
She's made of the good, salt of the good earth. You know, she's one of those people you won't ever forget once you meet her.
Yeah.
Hardworking.
Very hardworking.
She's an Angelican.
She stayed with us for a while, especially when we first started making our first mix and stuff. And you open up the lid and see the bubbles moving and it looks like something's inside that lid. And, you know, then you know you're into the real deal.
Part of the agreement was that she would come and help us.
Yeah.
It's a pretty complicated process in a way.
In what way?
There's a starter, you know, it's similar to like a sourdough.
Okay.
In a way. That like,
which I've still yet to figure out how to do.
I have no idea. You have to start the bread almost 24 hours in advance of actually baking it. You know, you mix the initial ingredients and it creates a bacterial fermentation.
Like a yeast?
Yeah, like
a
yeast.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, so instead of a yeast making the bread rise, this bacteria makes the bread rise.
Mm.
And it produces mostly hydrogen, and that's what makes the bread rise. So the biggest thing is keeping the temperature controlled.
Mm.
So it has to be in a temperature between about 106 and 110. So we have a heated room that we put the starter in, and then we put it in there and shut the lights off and go home.
Hope for the best.
And hope for the best. And then you come back the next day, and if it smells a little bit funky, maybe sometimes a lot funky,
that's the
then
best.
It's ready to
then develop. That means that's thumbs up.
Yeah.
That's
thumbs up.
It's baking time.
Yeah.
When it's moving by itself, it's ready.
First place you can get it is about 400 feet from here at Harrington's Grocery in Belfast. And then you can get it up the road at Ace's Country Cupboard.
Oh, yeah.
The diner in town, very popular place.
Cuba cheese.
Go up and down Route 19, and there's plenty of places to...
Copper Keg.
Yeah.
I mean, it's everywhere.
Yeah.
The thing that we haven't mentioned to you, there's no preservatives in this bread whatsoever.
Oh.
So it's very finicky. You leave this out on the counter for 2 days, you're going to have mold. So it's best when refrigerated after opening. You can keep it in the refrigerator for at least a week, 2 weeks without any issues. The minute you leave this out on the counter, you're going to have mold and everything else coming out of it. So it's very finicky.
So, Kirk, you're retired and you had a whole career. You're taking care of your family, so you're not in here baking every day. David, are you in here baking every day?
Not currently. I have a bakery manager in place, and he handles all of that. But we still struggle with labor for all categories. I mean, bakers, packagers, delivery people.
Mm-hmm.
It's a struggle to find people. It's early morning. There's quite a bit of lifting involved.
A lot of lifting.
And so it can be, you know, it's pretty physical.
Okay.
And so it has been a struggle. In fact, we probably could produce a lot more bread and sell a lot more bread if we were more confident that we had, you know, a more reliable labor force.
What has it meant to the two of you to bring this back?
Well,
a lot to me.
You know, Kirk,
a lot to me.
Kirk can answer that better.
Yeah, it's just, I was born and raised there. Just something I felt I could do. The accolades we got after bringing it back from everybody.
Oh, yeah.
You couldn't walk through Angelica without somebody hugging you and saying thank you for bringing it back.
Yeah.
And,
you know, salt raisin bread in general is a dying tradition.
Sure is.
You know, it was born in Appalachia. And for generations, it passed on to, you know, grandmother, to, you know, to daughter. We didn't want to see it die because we grew up with it. We loved it. That was our big thing.
Yeah.
You know, we knew we weren't going to get rich.
Yeah, correct. And it wasn't ever about the money or getting totally rich. It was just bringing back a staple that's been here forever and everybody knows about it.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for both spending some time with us this morning and learning about the story of the Angelica Bakery and the bread that you're continuing to bring to the residents of this region. Bread is life. And I'm really glad that Angelica Bakery is back and thriving.
Thank you.
Thank you very much for the time.
There's more Tapestry coming up right after this.
Explore the Underground Railroad's final stop. Learn about how the Latine workforce organized to overcome discrimination and follow the timeline of immigration in Western New York.
So remember, history surrounds you and includes you.
Watch Compact History on the Buffalo Toronto Public Media YouTube channel.
From your morning commute to quiet evenings at home, Buffalo Toronto Public Media is always there with trusted news, inspiring stories, and timeless music. It's your connection to a world of wonder. This is Public Media.
Welcome back to Tapestry. For our final segment, we visit the studios of WQAR, Angelica's all-volunteer, low-powered FM radio station with founders Jim Ruschak and Don Ash. Can you guys tell me how this all started?
I forget what year. Can you help me with that, Don?
It might have been 2010, 2011.
At that time, it was President Obama was opening up for the first time in about 20 years bandwidth for anyone that would be interested for a low-power FM station. So we kicked it around. We said, why not us? Oh, we can do it.
Yeah, Don, did you ever fancy a career in broadcasting?
We never knew about it. We thought it was a good idea, and it's a good thing at the beginning that we didn't know about all the things you had to do, the tech and the broadcasting part, but also deciding to become a 501c3. That was a good step, a good thing to do. FM was turned on in 2016 in August. We were already streaming on the internet just a little bit before that, since the FCC does not regulate your internet streams.
When you think about what you all are doing, it's not just the two of you. The mission of the station itself.
Community. And the more younger people, the better. We've had some wonderful high school students over the years. Right now, no high school students are having a show, and we miss that.
So what are the kinds of things I'll hear on WRAK?
Different types of music. Jazz, pop, rock, Americana, big, little blues. Public affairs in the sense of we have several shows about U.S. history, government, civics. Civics education is, it needs some help, I think. So we're trying to put a little bit in there, gently in a couple different places. We have one gentleman from New Hampshire, produces a little spot, a minute and a half, about different laws across the country and different issues to worry about. That's important to us.
It does sound a lot like the public radio model.
Jim says that from time to time, Lynn. And one of the things that you said before is a big deal, community.
Right, yeah. Able to give community members a voice. Yeah. Let's talk about the size of your staff.
Well, let's see, I'm going to have to think about that. You, me, there's two.
It's going to be a dozen or less right now.
Nobody makes a penny.
Oh, no, they and we are all volunteers. It's nice when we learn somebody has the radio basically turned on most of the day. Well, it's their hometown station. We'll talk about the spaghetti dinner that the Boy Scouts are having, or we'll talk about some event that's coming up.
Another thing that is nice about doing this, there's a lot of people all throughout the country that at one time Angelica was their home. And the miracle of the internet, as we stream our signal, we have folks all over the country that listen and they use it as a way to connect with their home once again.
So what's the future for the radio station.
Well, we weren't kidding before when we said we would always seek more high school students and younger people. Mm-hmm. That's important.
So if we've got younger folks who want to be stars on the radio and take on kind of an amazing mission mm-hmm. and gift to this community, they can get in touch with you right on your website, which is?
WRAQ.org. Lynn, how nice of you to say mission. That was nice to hear you say that.
The community takes a lot of pride that this little community has so many things, and believe it or not, there's a radio station.
It's about time okay. for your show to start.
Okay. Well, good afternoon, everyone. It's 4 o'clock, and you're listening to WRAQLP Angelica. Yes, it's time for Frank at 4, where we highlight the music of Frank Sinatra.
Once Jim started his show, I met a local community member, Josh Shannon, on his way in to prep for his local show, the Hip Crips Music Emporium.
Hey, Josh, how's it going?
I'm well. How are you?
Good, good.
Good. We're just rolling right inside.
Go right on in.
All right.
How did you get involved with these guys?
Yeah, pretty much from the beginning. I've always been interested in music. Before my injury, I used to play guitar and sing in bands and stuff, and this is a way I can kind of still find new music and at least, you know, share music, that kind of thing.
I know we only have a couple of minutes, but can you briefly tell me about your accident and when that happened?
I had a motorcycle accident in 2007. We were just out. Somebody pulled out in front of us, and I went into the guy's door and broke my neck. A C7 quadriplegic, meaning all four limbs are affected, like my hands don't work real well. I'm not disabled, you know, I'm still able in other ways, but I am crippled, you know.
So for you, you're fine with the terminology that you own?
Yeah, absolutely. You have to make light of it, you know. If you don't, you know, just like any bad situation, you know, we try to add humor to it, I guess.
What has it meant for you to have this radio program?
It's a way for me to find new music, really. That's, you know, whether it's, I mean, music could be 100 years old, but it's new to me.
What's it like being a part of a community volunteer-run radio station? Not every little town has this.
No, it's kind of interesting. We sit at the Park Circle every Saturday. You know, it's interesting. People come from all around, and they're you know, surprised to find that this little tiny town in the middle of nowhere has a radio station. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I think we need to let him go.
All right, we're going to let you go. We're going to record a little bit of you starting your show, and then we'll get out of your hair.
All right. Well, it was nice to meet you guys.
Yeah, you too.
Good evening and welcome to the Hip Crips Music Emporium on 92.7 FM. WRAQ-LP Angelica, the sound of our town. It's right in our little community radio station nestled here in the foothills of the Appalachian Mountains. We are broadcasting with a full house today. We've got microphones and cameras and all kinds of neat stuff going on today. But at any rate, it has been a beautiful day. Sun is shining, the sky is blue, and it's a good day to be around. You can't help but smile. We have a lot of gray days out here in the southern tier of New York, and it's nice to have the sun shining.
That wraps it up for this episode. It's been a blast exploring the tapestry of Angelica. We'll definitely return, maybe in August, for Heritage Days. And I want to learn more about this mysterious game called Roque that Angelica is known for. Next week, we head to Olean, New York, in Cattaraugus County. Be sure to catch us right here on BTPM NPR and wherever you get your podcasts. Tapestry is a production of Buffalo, Toronto Public Media. I'm Lynn Bader. Thanks for listening.